back to another episode of From Complex to Queens, Home Run Applesauce's minor league podcast. I'm Lucas Flahos. I'm joined this week by Ken Lavin. We have another skeleton crew this week. How you doing, Ken?
Good. Good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm waiting for my back to start hurting after a round of batting practice because, you know, I'm almost 30 and these things start happening. Lots to do today. Lots to talk about now that the season is getting started here. And we're in a little bit of a rush, so we're going to breeze right past remote extend trade this week. But I do want to talk a little bit about Syracuse, who opened their season yesterday with a win over the Rochester Red Wings, I believe is that team. That's the Nationals AAA affiliate. Yeah, Nationals AAA affiliate. It's got James Wood and some other dudes you probably don't really need to know. The Mets won that game 6-3. Which is good. More importantly, we had a real nice start to the year for both Drew Gilbert and Luis Angel Acuña, who hit back-to-back homers in the fourth inning of that game, just really punctuating themselves, or putting an exclamation mark on the win, really, and demonstrating that they're the best prospects on the team. I didn't actually watch that game. I haven't seen any clips of it. Ken, I think you've watched some of it. What are any takeaways coming out of that?
No, both homers were smacked. Other than that, I don't know. Lucchese looked good.
I saw Lucchese's velocity readings were a little low. I'm not sure how concerned we are about that. What was the temperature? I guess up in Syracuse.
No idea, but they were all wearing long sleeves. So
delightful. Yeah, not exactly ideal baseball conditions in late March in Syracuse, New York.
As Yoenis Cespedes once said, this is not base weather for baseball. This is weather for sleeping.
a man of many wise quotes and perhaps less wise farm practices. I didn't see Acuna's home run. I did see Gilbert's. That thing was a tank.
Yeah, Acuna's was like a line drive out to... He's right-handed, so that would be right center field.
Oh, so he did the thing his brother always does with the oppo pop. That's a little interesting. For those of you who haven't followed this closely, Luis Angel Acuña is very much not his brother. He has a lot of the same flaws in that, you know, hits the ball on the ground too much, pushes the ball to the opposite field a bit too much. But, you know, Ronald has 80 grade power, so it doesn't fucking matter. Luis Angel does not have that. I think it's fair to say.
No, he'll be lucky to grow into average. Below average.
I wouldn't be surprised if he has got like, average raw pop, but just due to the approach and batted ball distribution, it plays down a little bit in games. I think I've established at this point that I'm not the highest on Acuña, but that also doesn't make him a bad prospect. He's still a very, you know, well-polished middle infielder with a lot of potential for steals and solid defense up the middle. So value there, just don't expect the sort of power you're going to get from Ronald. It's just interesting that that's a homer I picture Ronald hitting very frequently. Their swings are like carbon copies of each other's too, yeah, so I guess it makes sense. Yeah, it's very like, who did you model your swing off of? Give you five guesses. So that's Syracuse. They're playing their second game of the season tonight. We're recording this on Saturday before Easter. No idea what the score is there. Not particularly relevant. No other affiliates have started up just yet. We're going to jump into our draft updates now. I'm going to get mine out of the way because I actually have no updates. Michael Massey hasn't pitched since the 23rd. Presumably, I believe Wake Forest shuffled their rotation a little bit. I think they moved. I might be wrong on this because I don't follow the college game as closely as I should. But I believe Chase Burns had been their Saturday starter. They were using Josh Hartle on Friday. I think they flip-flopped that. And Massey is going to go on Sunday. So he'll be pitching tomorrow, Easter Sunday, against North Carolina, who are ranked, also both teams ranked in the top 25. Be an interesting matchup for Massey, who, as we discussed last week, has been off to a not so great start to the year. As for Slade Caldwell, as usual, I can't find any stats there, but I'm happy to report that he set the Arkansas state record for career stolen bases from a high schooler with 136. Wow. That was back on the 27th.
That's a crazy number. That is a crazy, crazy number.
I believe, so let me pull up, again, annoyingly, Caldwell stats are like not uploaded to Max Preps or anywhere else. As of the 16th of March, so that's almost 2 weeks ago, in only seven games, he had 13 steals and hadn't been caught. So it just gives you an idea of, you know, how absurdly athletic this guy is relative to the rest of the competition.
Yeah.
Not uncommon for high-end prep prospects in high school, frankly. Yep. Like, this is just what they do. I think he hit another home run as well. And admired it. I saw a great picture of him admiring one of his home runs. He's like 6 inches shorter than the catcher, and would not surprise me if they weigh the same, because Caldwell just looks like he's built like a fire hydrant. It's pure muscle. Dude looks jacked despite being 5'6". So
yeah, definitely the Francisco Alvarez effect.
Yes. The Corbin Carroll comps are gonna fly. I still think he looks more Gilbert-ish. Just really a question of where the power comes from. So going to be worth keeping an eye on that. Hopefully at some point I can get more full stat updates there. Ken, what's up with your draft follows?
So we'll get Drew Beam out of the way. He did not pitch this past week. So nothing new to report there. Carson Benj did pitch this past week. He came into two games. One against TCU, actually the day before we recorded, or the day after we recorded, and one against West Virginia. He threw 2 2/3 innings, gave up one run, struck out four, and walked none. So he gave up his first earned run of the year, but he struck out four against no walks. So,
drop him down the board. He gave up a run.
Yep. His ERA on the season is now a staggering 1.13.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, with the bat, he struggled a bit. He went 1-for-7 with a double, one walk against 3 Ks. And now on the season, he's still has a good line, but you know, this is probably his third week in a row where he's seen things fall. He's now hitting 320, 435, 530.
So remind me here, Ken, do you see him more as a pitcher or a hitter long term?
Hitter. He would potentially be like my dream two-way player, which is an everyday outfielder who closes once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Or closes out games when needed.
Right.
I've always wanted to see that.
It certainly seems like we're seeing more and more of these guys. So it wouldn't surprise me if we get one before long. But given that, the declining offensive performance is maybe a cause for concern there.
Yeah. You know, like we said at the beginning, part of what I think is going to be interesting about him at the next level is what he does when he presumably specializes as a hitter.
Right.
You know, so.
We've seen a number of these guys take off.
Looking to be. The plate discipline is standing up is still what, you know, that's why I'm not going to ding him too much about having a couple of down weeks.
I mean, what's the walk to strikeout again there?
Walk percentage 17.74, strikeout percentage 13.71.
It's a little surprising because you'd almost expect that a guy who is splitting time would have, you know, something of an unpolished approach at the plate, but clearly that's not the case.
Right. I think where he could potentially get some gains is by, improving the power a little bit and making a little more contact when he does decide to swing.
I mean, if we could, how about this? We convinced Nolan McLean to stop hitting, and he can teach this dude how to hit for power, and then you got something there. Granted, there I think McLean's strategy for power is just swing as hard as you possibly can in a groove and occasionally connect and hit the ball a mile. Okay, great. Sounds so your guys are looking a little bit better than mine there, I think. We're going to give Thomas and Steve a chance to update their draft guys, and then we'll come back and start our bold prediction section.
Hey everybody, Steve Seiba here, and since I'm dropping by this week to discuss my predictions for the 2024 season, I figured that I would highlight my two draft follows that I've been keeping tabs on since I was last on the show. And first up is Noah Franco, the outfielder slash left-handed pitcher from the IMG Academy in Florida. So through 15 games now, he is hitting 400, 455, 500, very nice simple triple slash line, with 3 doubles, 1 triple, 0 home runs, 3 stolen bases in 3 attempts, and 3 walks to 8 strikeouts. As a pitcher, he has 5 appearances on the season, and in 20.1 innings, he is still yet to allow a run. He's allowed 7 hits, he's walked 13, and struck out 34. So, Franco, he's a prep player, and he's a legit two-way player. So that does make things a little bit more difficult to gauge, but I think his stock is holding pretty steadily. He's had the same amount of at-bats now as I'm recording that he did the entire season last year, and on the whole, his defensive numbers are slightly down. He's hitting for a better average, but he's walking less, he's striking out more, hitting for less power, stealing fewer bases. But on the flip side, with the exception of his walk rate, all of his pitching numbers are better. At the end of the day, though, you know, it's high school. And as we said many times before, it's the underlying skills that we're more interested in. And he's still showing all of that. So I think that his stock is holding. Next up is Dakota Jordan, outfielder from Mississippi State. And through 28 games now, he is hitting 404, 541, 894, with 9 doubles, 14 home runs, 2 stolen bases in 2 attempts, and 29 walks to 31 strikeouts. So MSU is in the SEC, and the SEC is traditionally a strong conference, and Jordan is thriving and great to see. He's third in the conference in home runs. He's currently trailing Charlie Condon, who's considered one of the top 5 picks, and Condon has 19 home runs. And he is also trailing Braden Montgomery, who is considered one of the top 10 picks or so, and he has 16 home runs. So that's good company to find yourself in. And besides for home runs, he's currently 7th in the SEC in batting average, 3rd in OBP, 4th in slugging percentage, and then 4th in just total OPS. So what was holding Jordan back in the viewpoint of scouts was basically his pitch recognition and his ability to handle breaking balls, which kind of hurt him last season in 2023. He was striking out right now tiny bit over once per game. He has a 22% strikeout rate right now. But that is a slight improvement from his season last year when it was a 25%. So trending in the right direction. And honestly, 22%, it's not even that bad. His walk-to-strikeout ratio is almost 1-to-1. It's 29-to-31, so great. And for a guy who has so much power as Jordan does, and, you know, is hitting all those home runs, a 22% strikeout rate is fine. Now, I will say, with this caveat, I don't have any readouts on what he's striking out against. You know, if every single strikeout that he has this season is against a curveball or a slider or something like that, then I'd say, okay, maybe there's a little fire here behind all the smoke. But for now, all things considered, I think that 31 strikeouts and a 22% strikeout rate is pretty manageable. And all in all, Jordan's stock definitely is up right now.
Hi, everyone. So I hope that your weekend has fared for you better than it has for the New York Mets. But I'm here to talk about a week that fared very well for two of my play two, my two draft players, Kalen Culpepper and Cam Kamenetti. Starting with Kalen Culpepper, he went 6-for-14 with two home runs this week. So as last week was a bit of a down week, I want to say it was a bit down. I still feel hard saying down because he was still solid, but it was just he could be better as someone who might go in the first round, and this is what we're talking about: two home runs, 6-for-14 in a week. That's the type of stuff you really want to see from a guy like this, from a prospect of his caliber. But yeah, that's he also. Let's see how many times he walked. I forgot to count those. Only walked once, but whatever. He got a lot of hits, so it's hard to get walks and those hits at the same time. So Cam Kamenetti only pitched once this week because he's a pitcher. Obviously, it's hard to pitch more than once. Went five innings, gave up two hits, gave up one run, walked three, and struck out 13. So yeah, he's good. He also let's see what he hit. It doesn't obviously, I have said it a few times, I don't think he's a two-way prospect much at all. I don't even think the team that drafts him is going to bother making him a two-way prospect. I wouldn't, if I'm being completely honest with you, but he only had two hits this week. He went 2-for-13. So, like, he's just not the strongest hitter in the world. Like, obviously, he is a better hitter than most guys at his level just because he's a first-round talent. All those guys, when they're in high school, are the best players on their team, so they all hit. But obviously, there's better hitters out there than he's just not a he's hitting is not going to be his forte. I think he's going to give it up rather quickly. I don't even think it's going to be a thing on his radar. So yeah, my draft prospect stuff was very easy this week. They were both very good, and I think that they are first round talents. It just depends mostly for Kamenetti if he's going to even bother declaring or even worrying about. He's going to declare obviously, but more I don't know if he's going to even bother getting drafted in the first round because he might just go to college. But Kalen Culpepper could be a guy who sneaks into the back end of the first round around where the Mets are picking. So yeah, they were both good.
And we're back. The season has technically already started. We've missed two games. Sue us. This is going to absolutely ruin our bold predictions here. So we're going to get them in now. I promise they're not going to be biased by the I was going to do a Drew Gilbert home run prediction, and now it's ruined. No, that's not going to be the case. Ken and I will go through our three each, and then Steve and Thomas will voice in theirs as well. And we're going to stick to the format we've used for a couple years running now, where we all three of us, or all four of us rather, have a mild, a medium, and a spicy. Ken, why don't you kick us off with your mild take here?
So my mild take is Jett Williams steals 60 or more bases across all levels in 2024. Mm-hmm. I think that's relatively reasonable. He stole 45 last year, wasn't particularly efficient. I just think he's a guy who's going to get on base a ton, regardless of where he is. And now that he's gotten his feet wet in Double A, I expect his normal level of offensive performance to give him the opportunities to steal. Mm-hmm. Perhaps a little more than last year.
Yep.
And I just figure he might get a little more efficient at it.
You would think also as teams gradually adapt to the new rule set, maybe they'll start emphasizing speed down in the minors a bit more, you know, give guys the green light more frequently and say, hey, you're going to be doing this in the majors. Why don't you run a bit more often now? So I could buy out 60 is a big number, though. That's a lot of steals.
But I think he could do it.
Yeah, so, I mean, they play, what, 120-ish, 130-ish games across a minor league season? He's got to have a steal every other game, basically. That seems doable. Yeah, that seems doable.
Triple A has the slightly longer season. And if he gets big league time next year, which, you know, it's possible, extend the season a little more.
Yeah, I mean, I'd expect him to get, you know, the cursory cup of coffee at the end of the season, and maybe that gives him a chance for the extra three or four he needs to finish things off there. Okay, I like this one. I have a similar stat count based prediction here. I'm going to tone it down from my original number, but my mild bold prediction is that Ryan Clifford is going to hit 30 home runs this year across all levels. I have to admit, this actually started off as something that was going to be a negative prediction. I have some concerns about Ryan Clifford. I still like the profile overall, but you know, there were some red flags there that cropped up at Brooklyn. How much of that is due to being traded? How much of that is due to playing in an awful park for left-handed hitting, or some combination thereof? How much of it is going from one of the best hitting development organizations in baseball to calling the Mets one of the worst is probably too harsh, but not one of the best at the very least. So I do have some doubts about Clifford, but then I actually looked at the stats, right? And in, 390 plate appearances last year, he hit 22 bombs as a 19-year-old, mostly. 19 and 20-year-old. Frankly, I think if he can demonstrate that the Brooklyn stuff is mostly an aberration, really good chance he gets the hell out of Brooklyn and they send him up to Binghamton. And honestly, you should have an easier time hitting for power there. 30 is a lot of homers for a minor leaguer, especially a guy who's going to spend, you know, the majority of the season at age 20 or half the season at age 20. But we're supposed to be doing bold predictions. And if things break right here, that's the sort of numbers you'd like to see him putting up.
Yeah, if you think of him as like, future contingency for like if Alonso leaves a couple years down the line, perhaps being that kind of hitter in your lineup once he's fully developed, this is the kind of season he would need to have to show that that's a possibility.
What was Pete's highest home run count in the minors? I don't know off the top of my head, actually.
I'll say 38.
Fangraphs is only showing me majors. I don't want that. He had you almost nailed it, 36 in 2018, 15 in AA, and then another 21 in AAA.
That season was just wild.
I don't think I appreciated how good that year was. 314, 440.
He was just hitting a bomb every other day.
Jesus. Because his AA line is insane, and then the average collapsed a bit in AAA, but he still had a 140 weighted runs created plus.
It's basically
and a million
what
bombs.
He did in the big leagues today.
Yeah. I was like, huh, this is
almost identical.
It's actually Pete Alonso. How nice. These are bold predictions, right? So they have to be a little bit out there or they're boring. That said, I have less conviction in this one than I do for most of my mild, bold predictions that I've made in previous years. I don't know. There's something weird gut feeling around Clifford. I don't have anything to substantiate it, and I hope I'm wrong, but we'll see.
That's fair.
Okay. That's mild. Let's amp things up a notch here and go to medium. What do you got for us, Ken?
Christian Scott starts 15 games in the big leagues in 2024. Decided to up it at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
To make it a little spicier.
How bold do you think that is? I mean, what's the timeline you think is most reasonable for Scott to get to the majors here?
I think he'd have to get there in like May.
Mm-hmm.
Because, he's probably going to go up and down a few times. May. Basically, you'd have to come up, I think, towards the end of May, which I think is a little aggressive. And basically, he'd have to pitch himself to stay there the entire rest of the way.
Right. So he threw 80, 85 innings last year. Normal ramp gets him to 120, 130, probably. Is there a chance they wind up having to shut him down in like early September, late August to protect the innings total? And maybe that prevents him from getting to 15 starts. I mean, so yeah, it has to be May. Okay, I see why this is bold, especially with how crowded the Mets rotation is at the moment, though.
There's Luis Severino, a lot of depth ahead of him.
Mm-hmm. Severino so, did not look great today, I'll say
he
that.
He looked bad.
No, it's one start. I don't want to one start, it's cold. If I recall correctly, he's also historically been a slow starter, even back when he was, you know, prime Luis Severino, so I'm not panicked about it, but worth keeping an eye on. You'd also think that maybe Jose Budo gets a chance before Scott, just because he's on the 40 already. Same goes for Joey Lucchese, honestly.
There's probably two or three guys ahead of him, and for that reason, I think likely he doesn't come up until June or July at the earliest. Mm-hmm. It's some injury fodder.
So I guess the boldness of this is that I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and assume you're not praying for 16 injuries in the Mets rotation, and just that it's going to be so damn good that they have their force to bring him up in May.
Yeah, like he made 19 starts last year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's more opportunities for him to start the big leagues. You know, if he pitches his way into the rotation. So figure he'd have to come up fairly early. You know, maybe like six or seven really stellar starts in a row in the minors gets him to a point where this is possible.
I mean, look, if he's running a strikeout rate of, what was it, 11.1 K9 and a walk rate under 2/9, like, if he's doing that at AAA, get him the hell up in the majors immediately. So,
yeah,
I buy it. Look, the fastball looks really excellent. The control is excellent. That sweeper he added in spring looks pretty damn nice, though he did, you know, leave one hanging. This is plausible. Like, I like this. I could definitely see this happening. Okay. My medium take here, and I feel like I do a version of this every year, me being the eternal optimist, haha. I'm going to say that the Mets have six top 100 prospects next offseason, not accounting for anyone they pick up via trade. Right. So let's assume if things go poorly and they wind up selling some guys off and get some good prospects back, we're not going to include that in the count. I'm only talking about players already in the organization or draft picks. So I'm looking at this like this, right? I'm assuming that Jett does not graduate this year, both because, you know, he's very young, he has no upper minors experience. And the Mets are going to be, frankly, incentivized to keep him down because you want to save the eligibility for a PPI pick in 2025. So Jett will be there. I'm to get to six. Here's how I'm getting to six after Jett, right? And I'm assuming Gilbert and Acuna graduate. I'm assuming that Nolan McLean and Brandon Sproat are both going to be top 100 prospects in the offseason. McLean, I think, is closer to that already than Sproat, given the stuff we saw in spring. Both of them obviously need to demonstrate this over a full season. But the Mets seem to be good at this now, and both of them had some impressive raw stuff or impressive arm talent already. And I'm basically expecting both of them to get there. That gets us to three. Next, we have Jeremy Rodriguez. I'm pretty sure he's going to be a top 100 guy as well. And then to get to six, we have any two of Clifford, who, look, if he hits 30 home runs, he's still going to be a top 100 prospect. He's a top 100 prospect right now. Any of the other college arms they drafted, whether that's Zach Thompson. Oh, my God, I'm completely blanking on the other names to the point where I have to pull up the draft pick tracker from 2023. Cade Morris, Zach Thornton, and Noah Hall are the three that I would highlight as most likely to have a breakout, for similar argument here to Sproat and McLean. They just have a lot less latent arm talent, which is why they're mid-round picks and not top three-round picks. And then also the Mets have a pick in the, I believe it's pick 19 in the upcoming draft. And that's typically the same range the Brewers picked in. The Brewers always seem to land someone that was, you know, creeping around the top 100 by the time the offseason lists rolled around, whether that was guys like Sal Frelick, Garrett Mitchell, Those are the two that come to mind immediately. So I think there's a real good chance the Mets can actually get to six here. This is also not counting any of the other guys, like whether that's Ronald Hernandez, Marco Vargas. I didn't mention any of them. They could conceivably be in this conversation. Maybe Ovani Rodriguez works out, that being the highest paid IFA in their last class. That could be another top 100 name. There are a lot of avenues to get to six if McLean and Sproat have taken as big a jump as some suspect they already have. If that comes out in the public, then suddenly you're already at four, basically, and it's almost a layup to get to six. Yeah, am I nuts?
No. There's a lot of avenues for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For to get to that number, I think there's a lot of guys in the lower minors who can push their way up.
It was enjoyable.
A few slots pretty much guaranteed to be filled. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And look, if Jet screws me out of this by, you know, completely blowing the doors off and graduating this year, I'll live with that. Oh no, we only have five top 100 prospects because Jet's already in the majors. Whatever shall I do? Okay. Mild, medium. Now we're up to spicy. Hit us with your spicy take, Ken.
Not even sure if this is possible, but Drew Gilbert and Luis Angel Acuna both get Rookie of the Year votes. I think Cincinnati had three guys last year get at least one vote. Basically, both guys would have to come up and immediately cement themselves as regulars. And I think if the Mets are going to be a playoff team this year, maybe not those two guys specifically, but they're going to need some breakouts from minor league guys playing their way onto the big league roster. I just like the two of them and think they would have a path to playing time.
So. Mm-hmm.
Gilbert, I think, is more likely.
Yeah. Just to contextualize this, there's a really crowded field. So there's a crowded field for NL Rookie of the Year this
year.
Like Yoshinobu Yamamoto, everyone presumes, is going to run away with it because he's a fake rookie. Jackson Chourio is up at the age of 20, is the number two prospect in baseball. Jung-Hoo Lee is another semi-fake rookie. Shota Umenomika is another semi-fake rookie. Jackson Merrill is up. Kyle Harrison is up. Jared Jones just looked absolutely incredible in his first career start for the Pirates. A lot of names here for Gilbert and Acuna to compete with. I buy the Gilbert part. What's the sell on Acuna here? How do you see him doing enough, given the limitations we kind of alluded to earlier, to, you know, be in this conversation?
He's more of a long shot, but I think if he comes up, plays very good defense up the middle, and puts enough bat to ball skills in play, he could be like a down ballot guy.
Sure.
So.
What is that plan? What happens to happen for him to get real playing time? I'm wondering, because there's a clear path for Gilbert, right? Like if Starling Marte is
outfield, basically they'd have to come to the determination that Bader's not going to hit enough, and Marte is compromised to the point where they both need to be bench roles, and then you can shift McNeil to the outfield, call up Acuna.
So you're playing, in that situation, you're playing Gilbert in center, Nimmo and McNeil in the corners, and Acuna at second.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Stearns?
Yeah, again, I'm not sure how possible I think it is.
Yeah. I wonder if one of the big obstacles here is going to be just Stearns. David Stearns has a history of valuing center field defense. Seems to have specifically targeted a guy like Bader to fill that role. I wonder if there's going to be some resistance there. You know, if he has an 80 weighted runs created plus, are they really going to be super eager to bump him off just because
of
the elite
like
defense?
A 60.
Yeah, I mean,
I
haven't actually. So I had a minor medical procedure on Friday and slept through the game and then didn't feel like watching today. So I haven't actually seen any Bader at bats. How's it gone so far? I see he's hitting 250, 250, or no, 140, 1 for 7 so far on the season. That's a negative 15 weighted runs created plus, and I'm sure he'll get replaced if that's the line he's posting. But has he looked particularly bad, or is it just a two-game sample? No, doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything. Okay. But he's certainly struggled a lot at the plate in his career.
I will say this: you've got an inside man in that Carlos Mendoza has not exactly covered himself in glory in the first 2 days of the season, which suggests to me that he's going to have no idea how to properly utilize Harrison Bader, which will suppress his offensive line and increase the likelihood that they bench him and put Acuna in instead. The most circuitous route to getting your bold prediction here correct possible. Okay, I like it. I definitely buy Gilbert. I'm a little skeptical on Acuna, but you've shown me the vision. My spicy take, and I don't even know that this is that spicy. No, it's spicy. I think that Jeremy Rodriguez, this time next year, or during off-season lists, is going to be a top 15 prospect in baseball. What am I basing that off of? Almost nothing, because I don't have firsthand access to the StatCast data from the DSL. But from everyone I've talked to, from like the secondhand information, from the whispers of whispers, right? And of course, just from the top line stats and what we do know about the StatCast, this is what the IFA blowups look like. Right, he makes contact, he hits the ball hard, he has a good approach, he plays an up-the-middle position. And these are all the elements you need to really just pop. If he shows up in the complex and is posting a 150 weighted runs created plus or whatever, and he goes to St. Lucie and does the same thing, maybe touches Brooklyn and does the same thing, you're getting into that conversation of really elite prospects. Top 15 is super, super hard to do. That would be something that would probably happen, a month or two at the midseason in 2025 if this train continued. But it's supposed to be a spicy take, right? And I'm trying to be bold and say that he's going to be so good that he forces this conversation early. And the Diamondbacks are going to be lamenting the fact that they traded this guy for Tommy Pham, who is somehow still a free agent. They'll be lamenting that trade for the rest of time. Crying into their National League.
I dig it.
Of course. There's just nothing to not like about this profile, frankly. Am I wrong?
No.
And it's, as we've talked about before, we have a lot less visibility into the DSL guys, unfortunately. So is much more a gut feel bet, but I stay analytical way too often anyway. Gotta go out on the limb at times. I'm fully expecting this one to be wrong, by the way, but if that wasn't the case, then it wouldn't be a spicy take. Okay, so now we'll open things up for Thomas and Steve to share their three bold predictions, and then we'll come back and wrap things up.
Hey everybody, Steve here, and here are my three predictions for the 2024 minor league season. So my mild prediction is that Jake Sedella has the best season of the three 2023 prep infielders that the Mets drafted, the other two being AJ Ewing and Boston Barrow. So the Mets drafted and a little surprisingly signed all three of those guys last year, Ewing in the fourth round, Barrow in the eighth round, and Sedella in the 16th. So far, Barrow has been the one with the most hype, and I use that loosely because none of them are exactly super prospects or anything like that right now anyway. So hype is what you make of it. But Barrow was ranked 25 on the MLB.com Mets prospect list. Baseball Prospectus, they had him ranked 20. On our 2024 list, we had him ranked 23. So he's on the back end, and none of the other two guys made any top 25 or even any top 30 lists. So I think that Zatella is going to have the best season of the three. And I mean, like, offensive season, because, you know, we don't have, like, minor league defensive metrics. We don't have minor league war or anything like that. So to factor in defense, and, you know, Ewing and Barrow are middle fielders, while Zatella's a third baseman. You know, I don't want to count defense out completely, but, you know, really can't factor it in. So, at first glance, Zatella might look like the most underwhelming of the three. He's listed 5'11", 195 pounds, while Ewing is 6 foot even, 160, and Barrow is 6'2", 170. So a lot of room for those two other guys to grow. And Zatella is the smallest already and the most filled in of the bunch already. But he is the youngest. He's almost actually a calendar year younger than the other two. Ewing and Barrow were both born in August 2004, and Zatella was born in February 2005, so quite a bit of difference there. And from digging into their profiles during the draft last year, Zatella to me has the most exciting underlying Statcast-esque numbers, whatever you want to call it. Over the showcase circuit in 2022 and then 2023, regularly put up 95 plus exit velos. He averaged 96.2, and he had a lot of highs in the mid hundreds. Ewing, he was more of a high 80s with a couple hundreds here and there. And then Barrow right now, he's more gap power, you know, not really slugging it. And, you know, professional baseball is a completely different game from high school ball. You know, all three of those guys could flame out because the game is 100 miles an hour more faster, you know, as a professional, and they are no longer, you know, big fish in a small pond. Now they're the small fish in a big pond. But at the same time, all three could dominate and show that their success as big fish in those small ponds, it wasn't a fluke. But based on video and some of the underlying numbers that we have regarding their swings and all that kind of stuff, I think that Zatella is going to have the best offensive year of those three next year. So my medium prediction now, and this one is a little spicy, so we're medium spicy here. The Mets are not going to have the Mets minor league system will not have a single player hit 20 or more home runs. So last year, the system had three players to hit 20 or more home runs. There was Luke Ritter. He led the system with 27. And then we had Ronnie Mauricio and Stanley Consuegra tied with 23 each. And then after them, there was Augustin Ruiz with 18, DJ Stewart and Mark Vientos tied with 16, and Carlos Cortez and Jeffrey Rosa tied with 15. And then in addition to them, the team has also traded, they traded for Drew Gilbert, and he hit 18 in total for all his teams. And Ryan Clifford, they also traded for, and he hit 24 with all of his teams. So Ronnie Mauricio, obviously he's out for the season with an injury. Augustin Ruiz, he's in the Minnesota farm system now, so they're both gone. DJ Stewart, Mark Vientos, and Drew Gilbert, I feel like all those players are going to bounce up and down from AAA to the majors based on, you know, team need and how their own performance is and everything like that. So while those guys are definitely capable of hitting 20-plus home runs, I don't think they're going to be doing it in AAA. You know, they're not going to be in the minors long enough to get to that plateau. So that leaves us with Luke Ritter, Stanley Consuegra, Carlos Cortez, Jeffrey Rosa, and Ryan Clifford. Luke Ritter first. Used to be a light-hitting infielder in college. The Mets changed his approach. They said, screw it. Just lift everything and hope for the best. And he went from a guy who had 18 home runs for his entire four-year college career at Wichita State to a guy who hit 14 in 2021, 15 in 2022, and 27 in total last year in 2023. And he probably would have hit 30 if he didn't miss about 20 games or so because of an injury at the end of the year. But if anyone is going to hit 20 home runs, it's going to be Luke Ritter. I do think that his home run total last year was an outlier. You know, besides his health, I think everything just clicked. I think that he's going to end up the year somewhere between 15 and 20, like he did in, 2021, 2022. But I don't think that he's going to quite get over the hump of 20. Stanley Consuegra now, lots of power, possibly the most power in the entire system. The last two seasons of Brooklyn, he hit 5.5 season with them and then 23 and 93 games with them. Like Luke Ritter, definitely has the ability to hit 20+. But his ability to put bat on ball, I don't know. He struggled with that in Brooklyn. He hit for a cumulative 235 average with the Cyclones over the last 2 years. I expect him to finally get promoted to Binghamton this upcoming year. And, if he struggled in Brooklyn, I'm not too bullish on his ability in Binghamton. Carlos Cortez, he's kind of like Ritter and Consuegra combined. He never hit more than 15 home runs before, so I don't know if he has that extra 5 in him. And in his last 2 years in AAA, he's a .248 hitter, so struggling to make contact at the ball, period, means fewer balls hit, fewer balls hit in the air, fewer home run opportunities. Now, Jeffrey Rosa and Ryan Clifford, those two guys are big wild cards. They both have a ton of power, but I'm not really sure how they're going to adapt. Rosa, he'll presumably be in the GCL. Maybe he gets a bump to St. Lucie a little bit earlier in the year, but doubtful. But, does he start enough games to possibly hit 20-plus home runs, and can he adjust to a new level? I don't know. Ryan Clifford, presumably he'll be starting in Brooklyn. He played 32 games there last year. Didn't exactly like the world on fire. He struggled mightily, to be honest. So, will he thrive on the field like he did in Asheville before the trade? I don't know. I hope he can. If he can, very easily can hit 20-plus home runs. I will be rooting for him. I don't want my prediction to be true, but we'll see. And now my spicy take, and maybe it's not too spicy. Maybe my medium and spices could be switched. I don't know, but I am saying that Brandon Sproat is going to be the Mets' number one pitching prospect on our 2025 list, conceptually, right now. Coming to the season, we had Brandon Sproat ranked 14. There were four pitching prospects ahead of him: Blake Tidwell, Mike Vassell, Dom Hamill, and Christian Scott. Now, based on pure pound-for-pound stuff, I think Sproat's stuff is on par with Tidwell. I think he's ahead of Vassell. I think he's ahead of Hamill. And I think he's on par with Scott. Control and command-wise, I think he's on par with Tidwell. He's behind Vassell. He's a little bit behind Hamill and behind Scott. Now, I think between Vassell, Hamill, and Scott, I think that some of those guys are going to be getting MLB call-ups. They're going to be getting sent back down to AAA. AAA is a very unforgiving environment for pitchers last year. And I'm assuming that Sproat is going to be starting with the Cyclones, which is a much better pitching environment. So I think that Sproat is going to have the best numbers of all of them in totality, in terms of ERA, in terms of strikeouts, in terms of, walk rates, innings pitched. So I think if you combine the great stuff that he has coming into the season, plus whatever changes the Mets are having him do, and we saw in the spring prospect game that he looked damn good, I just have a feeling that Sproat is going to be number one and inch Scott out. Or if you want, it'll be like a 1A, 1B kind of thing. But I definitely think that Sproat is going to be up there. I think that he opened some eyes in spring training that might not have necessarily been open already. And I think that having a full season to pitch in Brooklyn, or at the very least, if not a full season, a half season in Brooklyn, combined with the fact that the rest of the Mets pitchers, top prospect pitchers, are going to be in AAA, which is not the best, and will possibly be getting call-ups, sent back downs, whatever, I think that I think that Sproat is going to be the number one pitching prospect.
Okay, so prediction time. Full disclosure, I have not listened or do not know what Lucas and Ken picked for theirs. I kind of know because I read it in our Slack channel, but I kind of don't know at the same time, so we might overlap a little bit. But you know what? I was watching the Mets lose a baseball game on Saturday, so sometimes it really is like that sometimes, you know? Everyone sometimes watches to go see the Mets lose instead of doing their duty as a podcast host. Anyway, or co-host rather. Anyway, my mild prediction is, I think, it has a tinge of spice to it, I think, but four Mets in the minor leagues right now who are rookies will be major contributors to the Mets everyday like lineup and stuff by midseason. And of course, I'm recording this Sunday night where Tylor Megill is already hurt. So that's just going to speed up this process, I believe. But I think it'll be Drew Gilbert. I think it'll be Christian Scott. I think it'll be Jose Buto. And I think it'll be Luis Angel Acuña, which is a little bit of a spice in there because he's arguably less, I think he's the least ready out of the four. But I think this is a multifold reasoning. I think while the pitching depth, we talked about it at length on this podcast and I think in other places, it is considered pretty solid all around. I also think that this isn't the healthiest rotation. Severino has had his injury stuff. Manaea has had injury stuff. Tylor Megill is already hurt and has had injury stuff. Like, of course, Marai could come back clean and he could be okay. But still, like, he's been hurt a bunch. Kodai Senga is currently hurt. So while I do think that they are going to get a lot out of the rotation, like, I know they got swept this weekend and Severino did not look great. But overall, I think the pitching, like, I just think the Mets are going to be, like, kind of above 500-ish, just okay, like a little above average team. So I think there's also spots for these guys, and there's ways to get all of these guys in the lineup in a way that could really help the roster, regardless of even, it kind of doesn't matter if they're competing or not for these guys to make waves. So Jose Buto, I think, will be the first called up, and I could see him even be up this week with Megill's injury. I would not assume he takes his next start if he's having a MRI on his shoulder. And he already came up a little bit last year. I think he's still rookie eligible. If not, then it'll be three rookies instead of four. That's my mild prediction. But I think he'll be the first one up, and I think he has the potential to stay because I think there's something there with him a little bit as a back end of rotation guy. Christian Scott, I think if he ever comes up and makes the rotation, he's just going to be in it. I think there's too much talent there, and he's already 24, so it's hard. He's not like a 19-year-old kid where you're kind of rushing him. 24 years old as a pitcher, it's time to get him in the majors pretty much as soon as possible. Now on the offensive side, Drew Gilbert plays the exact position where I think the Mets have the biggest hole on their roster currently. While Marte had a strong week, I'm not sure if we're looking at a prolonged good season from Marte. And while he doesn't look completely cooked, I think that Drew Gilbert being left-handed, Drew Gilbert being able to play center and right, and even left, even though that's Nimmo's spot and he's going to play almost every day, the Mets have a very – there's a gaping hole in this roster for a left-handed hitting outfielder to platoon with Marte when you need to give him days off and give him more rest if he is going to be – if he isn't completely cooked and just needs more time off, then I think – or like more regular days off rather, and now with DH, he can't really get the half days off because JD Martinez is going to be here every day in a week or so, maybe 2 weeks. Drew Gilbert fits perfectly in that spot to platoon with Bader, to platoon with Tyrone Taylor, to platoon with Marte, and you could kind of play those four players at two spots in a rotation. It could be some days Gilbert in center with Tyrone – well, it would be probably Tyrone Taylor in center with Gilbert in right. You could play Gilbert in center with Marte in right. You could play Bader in center with – like you could just kind of move them all around and they'll all play. And also JD Martinez is not the bastion of health either, even though he's just DHing. Like he could definitely get hurt. He's had injury stuff in the past. So I don't think it would be a surprise for a bat spot to open. And I don't think DJ Stewart – I think the last year was very fun, DJ Stewart stuff, but I also think it was a little fluky. And we're kind of seeing the the flip side of that this year, where he does not look good through three games. Obviously, it's only three games. I mean, a bunch of people don't look good on this offense through three games, even though they scored a bunch in game two, and they had seven hits today and didn't look bad. It was just kind of disjointed. But I think there's a very clear opening for a guy like Drew Gilbert. Acuña is the spicy one out of this whole group, which isn't even that super spicy. It's because he doesn't really have that role that Gilbert has. But I think his best, I think where he could be best served as a major league player might be as a almost young Ben Zobrist type utility player. He has the athleticism to play center. He has the athleticism to play a corner outfield if he could play center. He's a great second baseman. He could play shortstop. I would not be surprised if he could play third base. He probably doesn't have the bat for third base, but I think as much as Zach Short is growing up a Mets fan is a great story and all that, he's never been a particularly effective major league hitter. Joey Wendell is at the tail end of his career and was very bad last year, and we haven't even seen him yet as a Met. He'll probably play this upcoming week. But there's a world where both of those guys are bad enough where you need a jack-of-all-trades bench player, and I think that could be Acuña even in a rookie season, where, like, Bader has been hurt a lot in his career also, to talk about injury stuff. Nimmo used to be hurt way more than he is now, while that has kind of petered off. You never know. Marte could also just pull up one day and he's hurt, like, because the injuries were devastating for him last year. So there's a world where both of those guys are up and playing regularly in not everyday roles, but basically everyday roles, with the idea of the year after you're maybe kicking a McNeil to the bench for an Acuña if he outplays him, or you're making Acuña your backup everything, like a Joe McEwing, Ben Zobrist type. I guess he's a better player than McEwing offensively, but you know what I mean. That type of player is very valuable to a roster, especially with only four bench bats, with how the DH is here and how everything else is moving around. So he'll play all over the place anyway, and he'll play a lot, even if it's not in the everyday he is the second baseman, that's it type of role that he could also just win out if McNeil doesn't play well, which he looks kind of disjointed at the start of the year and wasn't good last year. You never know if he's on the tail end of his career and he's on his downswing. It's way too early to tell with that, but I think that there's room for all four of those guys to make actual strides with the 2024 Mets. And then even if it doesn't get the Mets into the playoffs this year, it gets the Mets more answers for the 2025 Mets when they can start building out another, when they start building out their roster for that season. My mild one is that Ryan Clifford ends the season. He ends the season in AAA. I mean, medium, not mild. Maybe that is a little spicier than I'm giving myself credit for, but I think even though he's starting at high A, I don't think he's going to be there very long. I think Clifford has the chance to kind of make it out of high A in like a month or so if he plays really well, and then he's in Binghamton, and then a strong year at Binghamton means he could end the season in Syracuse. I'm not saying long extended period of times in Syracuse. I'm not saying he's taking like 100 at-bats in Syracuse even. It might even be a week or two of games where he's ending there to get his feet wet in the area and getting his feet wet with that level of ball. Before then, we're talking about 2025 is when you could see Gilbert coming up as like a DH type or something like that. Or not Gilbert, Clifford. You're seeing him come up as like a DH type or something like that. But I kind of could see a guy like him flying through the system a little bit if he hits, because he's going to play first base, or he's going to play a corner outfielder at outfield spot, and he's going to be an optimized-ish minor league hitter. So that type of profile could kind of fly through a few systems, especially when he's, I believe he's 21. So being 21 in at 22-ish in AAA isn't exactly out of the ordinary. I'm Googling him right now because I forgot how old he is. So, yeah, he's 20. So he'll be 21 during the season. So being a 21-year-old to end the season in Syracuse and then you're 22 in there is possible. I don't know if it's likely, but it's possible. Now, my spiciest take, I think, is that Nolan McLean becomes a legitimate top-end pitching prospect in this system. I'm talking about he jumps. He could. I think that McLean has a chance to jump multiple arms in front of him because I am super McLean-pilled with the way with his spin rates and the way he looked in spring and the way that it seems that they're stretching him out to be a starter. It gives me Christian Scott vibes, and I was more impressed with McLean at this point in his career than Scott at his point of his career. That's when we're talking about the same parts that they're at now. At Scott back then and McLean now, I'm more interested in how McLean looks now, I would say. So I think there's even a little bit more ceiling there, perhaps, which is definitely spicy. And of course, he could get hurt. Throat could blow up. Scott could not graduate. And then that's even, it's going to look even sillier. But I think that's why I'm going with the spicy one, because I could see it. If I squint, I could see him really making a name for himself here in that way. But I don't want to bet on it. And I wouldn't put money on it, but I could see it happening. So yeah, those are my predictions.
And we're back. Really glad to get another season underway. Our daily farm reports have started to roll out. What days did you claim, Ken? I did not see the schedule.
I want to say Wednesday's games. Wednesday night games. Mm-hmm. So Thursday.
So to give listeners a view behind the curtain here, even after doing this for 5 or 7 or however many years, we still always have to juggle the terminology of which day's posts we're referring to. Between, are you writing the post that goes on Monday or the post about the games on, well, there are no games on Monday, the post about the games that are on Monday, if such games occurred. So Ken has the midweek post. I believe I took Friday and, or the Saturday post and the Sunday post. Steve, as usual, has claimed the Monday post, if I recall correctly, and I think he has another weekday, and then Thomas will have the last day of the week. We'll have more to talk about as the season goes on here and these games actually start being played. Syracuse is already starting. Do you know when Binghamton starts up? You'd think I would know these things, but I do not.
No, you'd think I would either, but I don't. So that's a Steve thing.
Two paid subscribers to MILB TV here, folks, and we do not know when the
Binghamton Rumble Ponies schedule.
This is the hard-hitting analysis you tune in for.
Excellent radio.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Come on, Internet. You can do it. April 5th.
April 5th. Oh, okay. So only less than a week out.
Next Friday.
Fun. We'll get Jet games before the end of next week. Very good. By next weekend. Fantastic. All right. So until then, you can always listen to or subscribe to all of the Home Run Applesauce podcasts through Apple Podcasts or any other non-iOS app. We encourage you to leave a review if you enjoy the show. It really helps. You can find us on Spotify as well. You can also visit the Patreon for bonus episodes. We just did one. Me, Thomas, Brian, Chris, and Allison hopped on to do a sort of start of the season vibe check podcast for Patreon subscribers. You can go listen to that there. We're going to be doing a lot more bonus content throughout the rest of the season as well. You can find all of that on the Patreon. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at elvlahos343. Ken is at kenlavin91. And Thomas is at sadmetsscn. Until next time, love the Mets. Love the Mets.